All right, awesome. Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Jonathan, and I'm calling the meeting to order. Brandy, can you please conduct roll call?
You got it. Sue Kroger?
Here.
Derek Espadas?
Here.
Zach Coble? Ray Jordan? Lily Bogan?
Here.
Wesley Derbyshire?
Here.
Kate Elliott?
Here.
Jonathan Lee Confer?
Here. I didn't hear Ray say here. I think I saw him say it, but it didn't come through on the voice for, in case it didn't register.
Yeah, I saw him say it right when I looked up, so.
It sounds like Lily's here too. I think she was counted absent.
Yeah, it looks like Lily entered as well.
It just logged on.
Perfect. All right. Sounds good.
All right. So this is the time for public comment on issues pertinent to the disability community in Tucson. If there are any individuals from the public, please feel free to state your name and you'll have up to 5 minutes to share. Okay, kind of seeing there's no public comment, we'll go ahead and proceed. Has everyone had the chance to review last month's minutes? And if so, are there any additions or corrections? All right. Hearing none, may I have someone motion to approve the minutes?
Commissioner Bogan moves to approve the meeting minutes.
Thank you, Commissioner Bogan.
Commissioner Elliott seconds. Commissioner Elliott seconds. Motion.
Thank you, Commissioner Elliott. Brandy, can we conduct a roll call vote?
You got it. Sue Kroger?
I wasn't at the meeting, so I think I'll abstain.
Okay. And then Derek Espadas?
Yeah.
Ray Jordan?
Yes.
Lily Bogan?
Yay.
That was a yay, right?
Yes.
Perfect. Okay, sorry. Wesley Derbyshire?
I was not present either, so I abstain.
And then Kate Elliott?
Yes. Yay.
And then Jonathan Lee Confer?
Yes.
All right, so it looks like it is going to be 5-2 abstaining.
Okay, that looks like the minutes are then approved.
Perfect.
All right, so we have individuals presenting the Children's Outdoor Bill of Rights. Presenters, I'd love for you to introduce yourselves, and the floor is yours for however long you need. I think it's 5 or 10 minutes I think you guys requested, and happy to have you guys here.
Hi, thank you. I have a screen to share, too. May I try to do that?
Please, yeah.
Here we go. How's that looking, everyone?
Can see it. Thank you.
Good. All right. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to share with you all today. My name is Melissa Munt. I'm an environmental educator with Pima County Conservation Lands and Resources, and today representing the Pima County Connecting Children to Nature Coalition. And yes, I'm joined by two colleagues. I'd love for them to introduce themselves as well.
Hi, Commission on Disability Issues. It's Jasmine Chan with Parks and Recreation. I've been to a couple of your meetings before, and also very excited to be here in this capacity with the Pima County Connecting Children to Nature.
Hi, everybody. My name is Xochitl. I'm also with the City of Tucson. I'm out of the Water Department in a small program called Storm to Shade. And I'm also part of the Pima County Connecting Children to Nature with Melissa and Jasmine.
Thanks, everyone. Yeah, we're excited to let you know a little about our coalition, our vision, our priorities, but mostly hear from you feedback on how we can really be keeping disability issues in mind. So without further ado, let me see if I can change slides. Go. Great. Our coalition was formed in the summer of 2022. We were then and are now supported by a larger national network called the Children and Nature Network. It's really looking at a systems change approach to addressing nature deficit disorder in young people. If you've never heard of nature deficit disorder, you're not alone, but you've probably seen it. It kind of looks like these kids glued to their phones. Increasingly, kids are having a more sedentary, screen-based, indoor childhood, and it's having some detrimental health effects. We'll hear a little bit more about that in a minute, but I just wanted to start off with this understanding that our local Tucson initiatives are really supported and modeling efforts out of all of these other communities in the nation. So it's a large-scale problem, but also a large-scale response, and I find that very inspiring. So our vision is simple but powerful. We envision safe and equitable access to nature for every child in our community. And our coalition for the past 3.5 years has been really trying to have conversations and bring more and more people to the table so we can understand that every child in that sentence, right? Like, what are the unique needs and barriers for the different sectors of our community, and also understand the nature in that sentence. Like, this is a lovely picture of Agua Caliente Park on the east side of town, but clearly our whole community does not look like that. So what does nature access and nature exploration look like in the desert? That's something we're actively talking about. And so we've been really trying to bring in stakeholders and perspectives and bring into our coalition practitioners who can really make this work more complete. And now our coalition has active representation from these different sectors: local government, early childhood, education, and a lot of nonprofit organizations. So in our local municipalities, a couple departments from city and county, there's early childhood representation, like Head Start, Child and Family Resources, the folks that are really trying to ensure that our tiniest community members are getting that great start, and how can we bring nature into that beginning. A lot of education partners, including school districts and environmental and conservation groups and neighborhood associations, are also groups that we're really trying to work with closely. And I will now pass to Jasmine.
If we can go to the next slide, I'll talk a little bit about the nature benefits for everyone, right? From in utero through infancy and childhood through adolescence and adulthood, being in nature has broad positive impacts on our physical, mental, social, and emotional health, as well as kind of societal health as well. For children, consistent exposure to nature for exploration and play and consequently learning contributes to increased physical activity, improved relationship skills, just to name a few. There's others on the screen there, and we can also share those resources if you're curious. In schoolyards in particular, outdoor learning environments offer great flexibility for instructors to be able to meet students where they are at for learning in the methodology that matches their preferred learning styles. Next slide. The City of Tucson Office of Equity developed the Children's Equity Nature Index, and it illustrates inequities when it comes to children's access to nature and where these inequities occur in our region. So using the data that we have available from demographics, park quality, locations of, you know, child care facilities, transportation networks, and public safety, the Children's Equity Nature Index shows what locations have a higher degree of social vulnerability and larger populations of children under 5 with less accessibility to quality green spaces. The partners in our coalition have already been using this to provide support for and identify support to become available for early childhood centers in high priority areas. So those are the areas in purple. And the areas in green are like lower on the index. We've also used it at Parks and Recreation for identifying park locations for including nature exploration areas in new playground design. Next slide. We do have an excellent local example of a nature exploration area. This is the Children's Peace Garden. This is located at the Manuel Herrera Jr. Park on the south side of Tucson. The Peace Garden was created and is stewarded by Becky Quintero. It's a beautiful, shady space. It has wide, natural pathway and benches and tables, picnic tables. They also host Second Saturday Story Time in conjunction with the Valencia Library. They set up a book pathway. So there's pages of a book that are printed out and then placed on stations around the garden, so you have a little bit of exploration as you're reading. It's a beautiful space. Encourage you to go if you are able to. It is connected by a sidewalk to from the parking lot. Next slide. And I've shared this before with this group, right? Parks is moving into universal design principles for playground design. And universal design also applies for nature exploration in public spaces, in schoolyards, and in early childhood centers. The images here show some examples we have seen either in articles that we've been reading or from sites that we visited kind of while being on vacation around the country. So we have a very large kind of tunnel space on top of a rubberized fall surface in the upper left corner. That's at a park in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And same with that other left side photo, that is of a walking path that has different texture surfaces at different intervals amongst each other. And then on the upper right area, that's at a park in Atlanta where you have a kind of a wetlands area and multiple ways to get up close to it, as well as go over it, that bridge that they've got. And then down at the bottom, different planters that are available for folks at different heights, being able to roll underneath it if you need to, or come up closer if you're shorter. Just wanted to share a couple of images of what nature exploration would look like. And then next, I'll pass it over to Sochil, who will talk about the priorities of our coalition.
Thank you, Jasmine. So our coalition has been working to kind of identify what are the most important things for us to focus on in and really narrow down where we want to go with doing all of this nature access for children. And we really identified three that are the most important, education and programming. And I'll go into each of these in the subsequent slides. Design and built environment, which is kind of the stuff that Jasmine was talking about in the previous slide. And then policy and public awareness. Next slide, please. So programming and education, really the goal there is to increase teachers and caregivers' knowledge about what outdoor play can actually look like and how they can do this type of outdoor exploration, nature exploration with their students or with their children, and really increasing the number of early childhood nature-based educational opportunities for children in a way that's equitable and accessible to all different types of demographics. Next slide. Then we have design and built environment, which is our second focus, is to incorporate nature-based play in different spaces that are both public and private that can be accessed by children. And these spaces would be reflective of the Sonoran Desert. Sometimes when you look up nature-based play on websites from other places, they have like logs and grasses and things that really aren't natural for our spaces. So we really want children to appreciate the types of nature things that we have here. And we don't need to create an artificial nature environment for people to really enjoy the outdoors. And then also evidence-based and data-seeking approach to expanding nature-based play so that it is very available anywhere people are able to go. within the urban environment. That's another part too, is, you know, it's easy to get to nature areas outside of Tucson, like Saguaro National Park, and places like that. But we really want there to be access to these spaces in places where people can walk to and get to within proximity of their home or in their school. Next slide. And so for policy and public awareness, what we really want to do ultimately is to create a Children's Outdoor Bill of Rights, which is kind of an aspirational list of things that children can experience in nature. Lots of cities have these sort of Outdoor Bill of Rights for children, and they're really place specific. This one is one from Baltimore that we've put here on the slide. This one has like breathe fresh air, explore safe and inviting forests and wild spaces. We don't have forests here, so that wouldn't be something that would be listed on ours. Splash in clean streams, ponds, rivers, and the bay. Again, it's very place, based. Grow a garden and eat fresh fruits and vegetables, play in vibrant neighborhoods, schoolyards, and parks, understand and feel connected to their city's unique ecosystem, develop confidence in outdoor skills and recreation, work with neighborhood mentors in nature, and have space for agency and action. So what we want to do is get a lot of input from lots of different communities to see what is important to them that our children experience. What do we really want? What do we mean, you know? And this really will give people a better understanding of what are some of the activities that really encompass nature-based play. Next slide. Go ahead, Melissa.
I think that's the last slide. Please go ahead, Sochil.
This is the last slide, and we really thank you so much for letting us present. We really, what we are here for is to get your perspective on the work that we're doing so that we ensure that when we're talking about access to nature, we're including all of the different sectors of our community and what that means for the community that is living with disabilities and how we can incorporate some of the knowledge that you all have into our processes and our products and everything like that. Thank you.
Thank you for that presentation. Do any of the commissioners have any questions for the presenters? Yeah, Commissioner Espadas.
Yeah, I'm very interested in the Bill of Rights. Are there, when will the community gatherings to develop that be, and how can someone get involved in that?
Yeah, Melissa, will you take that one? I'm not sure what the timeline is right now for that.
I guess we've done a few rounds of community engagement already. A lot of folks in our coalition work in school settings, and so we've kind of disseminated information through teachers and schools about how do kids and families play outside, and how would they want to play outside? Just getting all that kind of information in. We did a similar session with practitioners, just a real kind of visioning. We're at the point right now where we're kind of distilling that into kind of themes and categories. And then we're hoping next month, essentially, to have a draft list that we're going to community events and other public spaces to just get more and more feedback. Would love to bring something like that back to you all, or we can send a list of events, public events, where people can give input. We're hoping that by the spring, we'll have something that can be lifted up to mayor and council and county supervisors and go from there. Just the beginning.
Thank you.
think I saw Commissioner Jordan and then Commissioner Kroger. I saw your hand was up too and it vanished, but I'll go in that order. For Commissioner Jordan.
Cool. Thank you very much. Just exciting. I really like this. And I understand this is kids based, so you're talking about safe spaces and so forth, which is fabulous, but I want to see big kid spaces as well. Cause that kind of environment, says something to me as well as an adult. But getting back to the kids thing, I think wonderful. Do you foresee, being able to develop a small corner of most public parks, perhaps in the longer term, in addition to schools and other kind of spaces, access for everybody?
Yes. I mean, we're talking about any space, public or private, that a child may encounter. So public facilities, right? Public parks, also maybe like greenways or pathways that, I don't know, maybe along bike routes or something like that. And schoolyards and childcare facilities and anywhere really would be great.
Jasmine, do you want to say more about Silver Lake Park? Community engagement?
Yeah, so Silver Lake Park is located at 36th Street and Kino. There's, if you're familiar, there's both Quincy Douglas Center and Quincy Douglas Library that are located on the southern end of that that parcel there. So we have funding through Proposition 407, the Parks and Connections bond, to build a new playground there. So what we did was we selected that site as one to do a nature exploration playground. So it has an existing traditional play structure and is also located in one of those purple magenta zones on that Children's Equity Nature Index map. So we worked with Melissa, we worked with Children's Museum of Tucson to do some outreach both on site and also at surrounding schools to chat with children and see what do they want to do, what do they want to build, play with, how do they want to play in this playground. So we're moving forward with that design right now, both for Silver Lake and Metasol Park. So Metasol is on the north side of Silver Lake, the road itself.
So Commissioner Sue, did you have a comment?
Yeah, it's really Ray asked kind of responded to a question I had, but I also want to echo how exciting this is. I hadn't heard of it, and it's really quite thrilling. I think along with what Ray said, just see the public schools as such a critical piece to impacting their playground areas and what's available to kids on a playground, both during school but also after hours. And I wonder what kind of relationship or cooperation do you get from the public schools? Seems like they're a real resource.
Some members of TUSD, Tucson Unified School District, Sunnyside Unified School District, have come to some of our kind of broader convenings, I'll say, of kind of talking about this topic. I don't think we've been able yet, or they haven't had staff who are available to like sit on our steering committee, but we are working as a coalition to develop kind of like, here are the people who are working on this like on a monthly or more frequent basis. And then here are the people who are very much invested in it, but can't commit like that level of work. So you know, are we touching base with them every 6 months or something like that? And then how are we keeping connected with them? And then there's even more who are just like cheerleading, yay. So we let them know every now and then, like, here's what we're up to. And then they can help kind of let other people know what's going on. So we're kind of in that kind of formalizing all of that phase. But if you have connections with people at various school districts, who would be able to kind of engage on a deeper level on this topic, we would be more than happy to chat with them and figure out how to make our schedule work for them.
Well, I wonder too if there might be some good resources to tap within the College of Education at the University of Arizona, especially, you know, they've got so many contacts with the various schools, and mm-hmm. you know, they do have I'm not even sure what it's called anymore, but it's not called PE, but it's, you know, certainly kind of physical health education and sports. And it just seems to me that there would be some there that would be real interested in this and might be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So I could... I can certainly pass this on to some contacts I have in the College of Ed and let them know. I mean, I wonder if they even know about it. But let them know mm-hmm. that it's going on and whether or not they could, get connected. So I'll do that.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, there's so many intersections in this work. Like you point out, there's health, there's science, environmental education, and so it's really exciting to continue to encounter people who are already basically doing this work, and we can expand that table and make it even more powerful. So any connections you all have, we welcome. Thank you.
Is there something that you can, I mean, maybe the PowerPoint is good enough, but information that you can share with us that we can distribute and circulate, that would be helpful too. Or, you know, maybe websites to refer them to. Anyway, thank you.
I can follow up with a couple of, like, one-pagers about our group, and we'll get that to you somehow. Thank you.
Commissioner Jordan.
Hello. Just one more comment, just something that occurred to me. Sue mentioned the word connections. It will be important for these facilities, I'm not sure that's the right word, areas, to be well connected to their surrounding neighborhoods. Without the assumption that everybody's going to drive a car there. You know, a walkability from the neighborhood to the area where these little strip of nature in the urban environment will be.
Yes,
we see
absolutely.
And I say that because we see a lot of facilities, areas of interest to people that are actually a little bit difficult to get to, because they're not really well connected to their neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have no questions, but I have a comment and just an appreciation. Thank you guys for what you guys are doing. I think this is a really awesome project, and I don't know why, but I've been reading about some research in the past, like, 3 weeks about just, like, developmental things with children, and I think what you're doing is so important, and it really does tie the community into this. And, really, thank you guys. It's really wonderful what you're doing. Were there any other commissioners that have anything else to – any other questions? All right. Thank you, presenters, so much for your time. I really do appreciate you guys coming in and sharing the wonderful work you're doing. You're totally welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting, or you can drop as needed. But again, thank you so much again. We do appreciate you guys being here.
Thank you.
I'm going to sign off, but with appreciation, and I'll follow up with those resources. And I want to tell you all, you're invited to play in nature too, even if you're grown-ups. It's okay. please connect.
That's right. We did that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Take care.
All right, the next thing on our agenda, I don't know if you guys saw Commissioner Coble's kind of note to us. This is going to be an area and time for open discussion on under-discussed city departments and subject areas and visions for improvement. He kind of shared that kind of looking to go beyond maybe like the specifics of ADA, but even going into bigger ideas of like how do we talk to like SunTram or SunLink about things that can happen at the city council level, or how do we get those things brought up to city council. So if you guys have any ideas or conversations to talk about, we should do that here. And he also had three questions for us that can kind of prompt discussion, if you guys saw that too. One of them being, what is one area of city service or city departments that you know a little about and would like to know more? So feel free to honestly just speak at will.
So I did have something that came up. So the construction on Grant, I notice in Tucson and even on smaller side streets, when they do construction, there is no accommodation made for sidewalk, any kind of accessibility. And what I saw on Grant, Grant and Alvernon of all places too, so busy area. Because there was nowhere for them to go, a wheelchair user just took up the lane. Many people were not happy. I happened to shout out the window, good for him, because there was nothing else for him to do. I know in Phoenix, I was very surprised that I would get to a location and be ready to complain, and there was a pathway. So I think there's maybe a lack of training, and just making those accommodations right now as it is, there is no way for anyone with mobility issues to access Grant. And so that's just something that's not being considered. And I think that's something that needs to be addressed. And again, to universal design, benefits everyone. I'm sure all those drivers that were being blockaded would appreciate accessibility so that people didn't have to take over the single lane on Grant to navigate their wheelchair. So.
That's a great thought, and you're so right, because it's been going on for a long time for construction on that road. That's a long time without accessibility. Commissioner Jordan, you have a comment?
Oh, I do. I want to follow up on that very subject. I wonder if that was me that people were honking at. Maybe 6 weeks ago or so that I was in that area and yeah, had some difficulty navigating. I managed, but there was some four wheel driving involved. There was some riding on the road where I probably shouldn't have been, but that's the way it is. But to take a broader view of that, that is Tucson. Oh, the you know, department of whatever it is, public works that does these things, whether it's long term or short term, they might be shutting something down for a couple of hours. And you arrive there on the sidewalk in your wheelchair or get off the bus intending to go, you know, half a mile up the street that way, and suddenly it's blocked and with a sign saying sidewalk closed. Yeah. And what? It's like you are not welcome here. That is the message. Tucson's got to do better. There are places, and I think Jonathan, did you mention Phoenix? But there are certainly other places where, when works are going on, the municipal council, in this case, it would be Tucson, but, you know, the suburban council or whatever, wherever it is, require as a part of the permitting process for the work to go ahead that alternate routes, alternate accessible routes must be provided. And that does not seem to be a thing here in Tucson.
Yes. Jennifer, please.
Hi, all. I'm working on my camera here. Let's see if I can get this turned on. Thank you very much for bringing up the issue. I'll just share that we have been alerted, and it's frustrating that it's not being corrected as quickly as it seems it could be. This has been an issue that our project manager has been working with the contractor on. I agree that we need to have this a lot better thought through than have it happen while it's in construction. We have received complaints, and so we are working on these specific complaints, but looking in totality at that stretch. I'd like to be able to tell you that it's, you know, going to be fixed next week. I will share with you that our project manager is really activated on it. He is passionate about it, and he's trying to make it better and to actually be able to be passable. And by passable, I mean that there's actual ways for people to be moving through the area that are ADA compliant and welcoming, and not just this the state that it has been. So I wish that I had better news to share, and I wish that we didn't have to be in this situation. If it's helpful, I can bring more information on what steps we're taking, or even have our project manager come to a future conversation with the group. In my dream, I would love to set up a construction standard that we're actually training our contractors before we're letting them work on our jobs, so that we're starting out with an understanding from the get-go. I'll stop talking. I really appreciate what you all are saying. I wish that I could be bringing happier news, solutions. We are working on it. That's the best I can provide today.
Thank you, Jennifer. Commissioner Wesley.
Yeah, I'd like to follow up on that by first saying, and I don't know if this is in fact the case, but I was told that in fact there is a federal law that mandates in areas of high traffic and high population zones, such as Tucson, Arizona, that barriers are required to allow for pedestrians to still have access to roadways that are being constructed. And so Tucson has failed to do that on grant. They failed to do that in my neighborhood out here at Broadway and Houghton when the construction was done out here. I was directly accommodated during the time of that construction by the foreman who would walk me through the site, which, trust me, was not perfectly safe. But it did suffice, and it got me to and from. Had I been in a wheelchair, I would not have been able to navigate the site because the terrain was dirt and very uneven. In addition, I'd like to add in, just based something on what Jennifer was noting, that as a part of the standard in Tucson, it should be part of the standard that all of these jobs, that the curb cuts and the way that the you know how there's the ruffle things for the blind community to utilize to cross the streets, that those need to be verified and checked to make sure that they're actually compliant with how they are designed to be used, because I've seen them installed in the strangest of ways. And in fact, I've also seen the design work done in the modern times in the strangest of ways that puts the blind people directly into the intersection versus actually crossing the intersection safely. So there's a variety of things that are missing as part of the standards here in Tucson when it comes to construction. So we're spending a lot of money, from my opinion, and actually not getting an excellent job done. We're getting a low par job done. And I guess in closing, this would also be the same true for the audible signaling and anything else that's related to your surfacing, and stuff like that. So I noticed that in a comment recently, there's those big raffle rocks, right? And I've noticed that those have been put in as temporary stopgap measures too, which also cause problems as a temporary basis for people instead of what with the long-term plan. I understand that things can be done on a temporary basis, but again, the access was limited, and I saw that as a complaint on my nextdoorneighbor.com thing. So these are just things that need to be considered. Thanks.
Commissioner Jordan?
Thank you again. Jennifer, I appreciate your kind of offer to provide some further information. And I think, I hope that I can speak on all of us, on the behalf of all of us, and say, yes, please, let's have some further information. Let's have the project manager come here to explain why they are not doing what they should be doing. I mean, this, you know, if you wrap this up in a great big wrapper, it's all about pedestrian access, pedestrian safety, not just for people with disabilities, but for all pedestrians. This is not a new issue. I'm pretty sure we've discussed this before, about, you know, obstacles to pedestrians, whether it's temporary or permanent. And we get the same answers. Oh, we're working on it. We're trying to figure it out. 20 years behind the times. We shouldn't be talking about this. It shouldn't be an issue. It should already be done. And I'm sorry if I sound aggravated, but that's because I am. You know, we'll get platitudes. Maybe it's going to take a little bit of activism. More people driving their wheelchairs on the roads and pissing motorists off.
I just wanted, yes. Commissioner Krieger, was I next or no?
Yes, yes, you were okay. Next.
I just want to kind of reiterate both Wesley and Ray's comments. And I think for me, this kind of raises the issue that I think we've struggled with, not the council, but those of us with disabilities in Tucson, is it's really, I still cannot figure out who gives out the permits for new construction and major renovations, and how they determine that a renovation or a new construction, you know, deserves a permit, and then what's the follow up for enforcement? I mean, as I think we move around the city, it's just kind of one thing after another, and I don't know who to call to complain, but it seems like permits get distributed that perhaps aren't warranted, right? And that there's really no enforcement or follow up in terms of access. So I find that when, as Zach asks us, you know, what's frustrating, I still am pretty much at a loss for how this works in Tucson in terms of doling out permits for new construction and renovation.
Thanks, Commissioner Krieger. Are there any other comments?
Well, I have a comment.
Yes.
Yeah. So first of all, I want to commend you, Jennifer, I think you're the only face that we've seen here on a consistent basis and helping to advocate for us. Usually we have speakers and they disappear. So I appreciate, you being here with us and advocating with us. I think that's one of the things of great importance. I want to just everything that's been said, and raise aggravation, because I think it's valid and justified. I was having a good day. I got a brand new motorized chair. It was awesome. And I'm going at full speed. And then I got ejected from it. Because I hit something. And I didn't see what I hit. And I would love a little more information from Wesley on those, the dots. Unfortunately, and that almost what brought me here to the commission was I always referred them to them as the damn dots. And it's one of those things where it does become difficult with disabilities because, to Wesley's point, those help him not get run over. As a wheelchair user, especially when I'm using my manual, those cut my momentum. And then I have a feeling one of them was popping out and that's what ejected me. I can appreciate, in looking at the construction and having worked construction, I can appreciate the difficulty of it. But like as has been mentioned, I think now adding forethought to the plan, because I can definitely see the difficulty once everything is cleared and everything, of making things accessible after the fact. So if it's done beforehand, it might be a great addition, and not just for the disabled, just there's no way around it for anyone over there, and then have to cross when there's huge earth moving equipment moving around and the lovely Tucson drivers making their own excellent decisions. It just becomes a place of danger. But again, thank you.
Commissioner Jordan, then Commissioner Bogan.
Thanks, Derek. Well said. I didn't mean to kind of be offensive to anybody. But okay, so here's a constructive comment. I'm wondering whether it might be time for the commission to write another memo. With this thought as one of the bases, when the city awards a contract to a contractor to do the work, such as the Grant Road upgrade, or even small stuff, even when they're replacing a couple of, I think they call them flags in the concrete of a sidewalk, that contract, and perhaps the permit as well, should mention that alternate accessible pedestrian routes should be a part of that construction project. And there would be penalties to the construction company if they fail to provide said equal accessible pedestrian access. Thoughts?
Should we let Jennifer? Jennifer can respond to that. I think you probably should be next for this one to respond directly to Commissioner Jordan. You're muted, actually, Jennifer.
Gosh. Over the years, I have seen that there are different ways that cities handle issuing their right-of-way permits. So speaking specifically to anything happening in the public rights-of-way, there are trainings that can be required for any contractor, not just one the city uses, but any contractor. They have to go through a training to be able to get their permit, and they have to show that their folks have actually done the training. I say with cautious optimism that that can actually make some change. It's all really in how the companies really manage that, right? And actually trickle it down into their teams. But I think that, there are precedents out there that could help where it's not just recreating a wheel. It's borrowing what other communities have done with very, I mean, solid information that could be, used. And I don't think that's you know, it's an ask. I mean, it's more work, and it does have an impact to the private sector. But I am happy to look into more of that. And if that were something you wanted to suggest in a recommendation or anything along those lines, I mean, I could see that being an effective way to get people, because it's what I will share from my experience over time as a planner working in the transportation area is it's pedestrianism generally and bicycling. I mean, you know, anyone that's not a car using the right of way is an afterthought often in the way the work zones are set up. There are things we can do to really push and emphasize on that more.
Commissioner Bogan.
I don't want to beat a dead horse, so I'm just going to say I do agree with all the commissioners and stating that Tucson, as a fairly large city and the biggest in Pima County, should definitely get up to speed with the corrections and the ADA and our construction of sidewalks and reconstruction of our sidewalks and the pedestrian lights. And I can tell you, I came from Scottsdale. I sold my house in 2021 and came to Tucson. And when I was living there, I'm a blind person, by the way. When I was living there, I was doing some orientation mobility training, and there was a street light that did not have the audio crossing alert. I was told that I can contact City of Scottsdale and request to have it placed. From the day that I requested it to the day that it was placed, it was less than 2 weeks. So there's things like that we have to get updated on and make sure that something like that is requested by blind person or person with a disability, that it gets done. And just to give you the actual name of those dots on the ground, those are called truncated domes. So when you refer to those dots, it's called truncated domes. That's it for me.
I'm still pretty sure they're called those damn dots.
Laura's yours, Commissioner Krieger.
Okay. And again, I'm sort of with Lily. I don't want to keep beating at this. But Jennifer, I wonder if you, my fellow commissioners may already know this, but I wonder if you could help me understand when there is a major renovation or new construction within the city limits, the city does have to issue a permit for those, right? So they review them and issue them, even if it's not a city project. Is that correct?
So that starts branching into a territory that is not my specific area of knowledge, so I don't want to misrepresent anything. I want to acknowledge, Jennifer, if you have any anything you want to share in this area, please, hop in. I will share what I know as a planner. There are different permits that you obtain for vertical construction, right? Buildings, things that are, you know, the renovations and what I think you might be thinking of. Those would be your residences, your offices, your, you know, stores, commercial. There are different design criteria that must be met for permits to be issued that will allow a project to go to construction. And then depending on where that is, our transportation department may be also will issue a right-of-way permit. There's, you know, a few different permits, and it all really depends on what the project is, what you're proposing to do.
Right.
So I wrote in the chat that I do think construction as a sort of term, I think there are a few areas that we could help bring folks in to talk about that. What does that look like? So when someone submits, let's say an architect submits a plan and they're proposing to do something to a building, what is that sort of process that folks go through from when they submit their design drawings to the point in time that they can actually begin construction? And then how does a project close out? Because that's the other piece to this is inspections. There's often folks that, pardon me, in order to get a certificate of occupancy, which is often what a business needs to be able to open its doors and accept people into their space, they'll have to have a final inspection and someone will look for all the things. And I think there are ADA requirements in building permits that are reviewed for. That would be something that would be helpful to understand the different points in time that those are looked at, because there are people that are looking for them in the drawings and providing comments and helping people design better. And then there are people that are responding to construction activities and what people are doing physically. And then there are people that are confirming that things were built correctly. And that's all in that sort of buildings.
But would all the right-of-way issues be part of that as well in this sort of big process to get permits?
It's different. It's different. So capital projects and the work that so when we have a project like Grant Road that needs to be built, we will have design drawings that we, you know, hire a professional team to build, you know, to put that together. It goes through multiple rounds of lots of different eyes on it, all looking for different things, including ADA, looking for anything that might impact the appropriate flow of whatever traffic, foot traffic, wheel traffic, all the transportation needs. You get through a design process and then you go to bid and you hire a construction team to then take those designs, give a dollar amount, get awarded, and then go to construction. And in that construction activity is when you start seeing everything happening, like the Grant Road that's out there. It's often a need when you're breaking ground like that to be out in the field as a project manager, to also have the support of inspection staff. And I think, you know, there are others that do that, regularly and can speak to it and the challenges of it. I hate to be a person who says that we don't have enough staff. The reality is we are challenged in terms of having the quantity of people that can go out and keep eyes on these activities. It is a real challenge. And I think what we're finding with the Grant Road is that there weren't enough eyes out there to see what was happening and that it wasn't what it needed to be. I think that it's been a learning experience too. I'll share that we have a project manager that's hired on right now, and I apologize. I don't mean to speak so much. Give you back your time to the meeting. But, the project manager that we have is, you know, we've even had to go out to hire consultants to be our project managers as though they're city staff. It's a tough market right now to have enough project managers to run the most ambitious construction program that the city has ever had in its history. It's a great thing that we have all these projects and we've had the voter support for it. These are pain points, no lie, that are real. And so with the Grant Road project as an example, I will share, and I would like to ask if our project manager, Rob, can come and speak with you all to kind of talk through the process from awareness to working through the different challenges. And I think there are some incremental things that are happening. Maybe it's not as quick as we want them to be. And he can share those, but also take in your comments. I mean, this is, it's really important to hear, and that's how we learn and get better. And I also am very sensitive to platitudes. I get that. I don't want to be providing that. But the challenge is real. The struggle is real. So what can we do to help?
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. It just trying to understand the role the city plays both in its own projects, but also relative to the projects that it gives a permit to, right? And is there any follow-up to that? Is there any, kind of like you said, both awarding the permits, but then the supervision of it, right? And the follow-up. Anyway, I don't want to belabor this. I just would be real interested in pursuing this and to better understand it. Thanks.
One thing that I will just share too, and this does relate to Jennifer's area, is that the complaint process is not only for roadway projects, like as community members come across things, if they also come across things in any building area, the complaint process is structured such that people can provide complaints about privately owned buildings, not just publicly owned.
Right.
So there's a complaint process. I hate that that's, complaining about it is just that. It's highlighting that we just aren't doing it right to begin with. So let's try to get to the point of doing it right.
But that might be another spot where we could at least look at that process, right? The complaint process. I mean, really, that should be pretty accessible and welcoming, right, too. So, I mean, we might want to look at that spot. Anyway, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
100%.
Jennifer Bonham.
Hi. Thank you. Good afternoon. I wanted to reiterate what Jen just said. OEOP, our Office of Equal Opportunity Programs, does have a complaint process where folks from the community can file a request for reasonable accommodation or a complaint. And if it's on city property, I get all of those complaints, and then I have contacts with the various city departments to help remediate the accessibility issue. As Jen mentioned, we had one of the complaints came in, and we've been working with the departments, like for the Grant Alvernon area, on incremental changes. And as Jen said, there are still concerns, but We have been able to implement some incremental changes through the department working with the construction company. And I would just modify what Jen said a little bit, though. While we have historically taken in complaints about third-party properties, this office hasn't typically investigated those and referred those out to the Arizona Attorney General's office for investigation, but we do handle all complaints about city properties. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I think what we're kind of talking about, and I think we're all on the same page. You're on the same team here, like both, you know, Jennifer's and all of us here. I think the thing I'm actually hearing is that this isn't just a complaint. This actually might even fall under a lack of following standard of care. When we're looking at the actual adopted codes in terms of during construction, if you alter accessible routes, an alternative accessible route similar to the prior established accessible route is supposed to be in place. And sometimes you'll see this in like cities where they're doing like building construction on the sidewalk. They have scaffolding, but they create the walkway under it. It's a very similar concept of where if you're taking down the sidewalks and the roads, it's actually like compliant for us to make sure that there's alternative accessible routes that are mimicking what was originally there. And I think that's something that going forward, we need to kind of all be mindful of, because it's not even just a liability to the person driving the wheelchair down the road, but it's also a liability for the city itself. And I think when we're looking at both aspects of it, we're talking about the quality of life for people, but also protecting the city as well on that. Any other comments from anybody else? Do you have any other?
I just wanted to add in reference to, you know, Grant, and as an example, on 4th Avenue, when they were doing construction for the new building just south of 9th Street, I guess it would be, so that would be 10th Street, I guess, there was a new building that was constructed there. They did put up barriers into the road for pedestrians to move into while that construction was being done. So obviously, that particular...
Commissioner Wesley, I think you froze. I don't think we can hear you. Is it just me or is that everybody else too?
Yeah. Really.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, you're back.
I don't know what you missed, but I was saying that there's a part on 4th Avenue that was, they had an actual pathway for people to walk on that was, had a barrier by a new building that was just at the corner of 10th and 4th Avenue. And so why is it that that particular project, I'll just say, did it right, but yet a huge project up on Grant can't get it right? That's all I wanted to add in.
Commissioner Jordan?
Wesley almost took the words out of my mouth. I was thinking of an example in Melbourne, Australia, where I'm from. There was a big construction going on in the downtown area. Melbourne's a pretty big city, Phoenix-ish sized, and that construction blocked the entire sidewalk. So, and I imagine this was a part of the contract and probably permitted process as well, where the construction company had to provide an alternate route for pedestrians. So they shut down a half of one of the motor vehicle lanes and put down witches hats and barriers and ramps off the sidewalk onto the road along the road and then another ramp back onto the sidewalk at the other end. It was, you know, 200 or 300 feet or something like that. That's just normal in some other places. And I would like to see that as being normal. It's not just that I'd like to see it. I think it's the right thing to do to make that sort of situation normal. That is all. Thank you.
Jennifer?
Yeah, I was just going to share, as you're saying that, I had the opportunity to be kind of a liaison with the builders, the developers of some of the multi-story buildings downtown. And there was lots of coordination and conversations that happened with those projects. And part of it was lane closures. So we, you know, required traffic control plans be prepared, and we had some very clear guidance, particularly in the downtown area where we see a lot of congestion with traffic. What's coming to mind for me as I'm hearing this conversation is that I will come back to our capital projects teams to understand who is reviewing our traffic control plans for the roadways. It's possible that that process is different because we're requiring developers and private sector folks out that aren't city to submit through the right-of-way permit center. I believe that our folks do that as well, but I want to triple check that and confirm, and we may be able to use some of those more stringent requirements for the downtown area across the city. You know, they tend to be a little bit more you know, very pedestrian oriented, and that may be what's kind of missing as we're looking at it applied citywide and not just in the downtown.
Yeah, thanks, Jennifer. The person that you're speaking of should be familiar. It's the manual of uniform traffic control devices. I think it's section 6D.
MUTCD.
Yeah. Yes. That's where they have the whole scope of the accessible routes being modified to what it was before, and that should be uniform across the entire city, not just downtown.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I just have one other comment then to that. If it's something that's considered for downtown because there's more pedestrians, I'm sorry, the one outweigh, you know, the needs of the one outweigh the needs of the many, in my view, and where there's a need for the one, it has to be taken care of. And it's just my simple view. It's really as short as that.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yes. And I think the clarification is that we have some additions to the MUTCD that we have in a approved document that we provide as part of our right-of-way permit requirements. And that's where it gets a little bit stricter, if you will, or has some additional requirements over MUTCD.
All right. Any other comments? It's been a nice conversation. Thank you guys for sharing everything. Anything else to add?
I didn't put my hand up.
You're good.
It's been a great conversation. And I didn't expect it, but it's taken up a lot of time. And it's been basically about one topic, but obviously an important one to a lot of people.
Yeah, I shared the similar surprise. I'm like, it's gone a lot longer than I thought it was going to be. And I honestly, just to kind of reiterate what was said before, I do appreciate both Jennifer's for being here and being here consistently. We do appreciate you guys being here.
Takes a village and a team. So we're trying.
How about we go ahead and move on to announcements? Are there any events or efforts in the community related to disabilities to share?
Me again. I guess I've just got one. It's a little bit frustrating at the moment. As some of you may know, I also serve on the Tucson Transit Advisory Committee. Mm-hmm. And I haven't got there yet so much, but I have provided the chair of that committee with a list of 6 or 7 or 8 topics that are disability related, disability and transit related, there. And none of those have made it, to a meeting yet. So I continue, I continued to poke the bear. Well, sorry, she's not a bear. She's a really nice lady. But so there was a really bad choice of words. I continue to try to make that happen.
Thank you. Commissioner Bogan.
Yes, I wanted to bring up SAS, Southern Arizona Adaptive Sports, again. They are going to be at Rialto Park this Saturday. We are doing a loop-de-loop event for it's the opening for the Tour de Tucson. They're looking for people to donate, ride with. They are a adaptive sports team, so you can do hand cycles, you can do tandem bikes. But if you'd like to get more information, just come to the event. It's 7 a.m. to noon, and they'll have a tent there, and just come to their table and talk to them.
Thank you. Was there a specific time associated with that?
Yes, 7 a.m. to noon. We're doing the full loop that day, this bike loop. So I think someone will be at the tent all morning, 7 to noon. But the whole team should be there by noon.
Got it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mia Hansen is the person you would want to talk to. She used to be a chair of this committee as well. Yes.
All right, are there any other efforts or events going on you guys have to share? All right, so I'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting. It's 4:48. Can I get a motion for this?
Commissioner Bogan moves to end the meeting.
Thank you, Commissioner Bogan. Can I get a second?
Ray Jordan, I'll second.
Thanks, Commissioner Jordan. Brandy, we're good to stop the recording.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Thanks for the conversation and the that was really really good one. That was really good.
Thank you.
Thanks for chairing today.
Yeah, great job.
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Thank you guys.
Well, I actually thought there was someone from the city that was going to talk about underserved things, and then all of us. It was great.
Hey, Wesley, so I think this was like, I think February, yeah. We talked about there being a study.
Yes.
We got the IRB approval officially. If you are willing to, I'd love to have one of my students come and interview with you, if you don't mind. But totally no pressure. It's just if you're interested.